This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Ruby Susan, and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by David Gale. We'll be speaking with Rodney Croom, one of Australia's most iconic LGBT activists and the National Director of the Australian Marriage Equality Organisation. We're speaking to him on both the recent mass shooting in Orlando, Florida, and the upcoming Australian federal election. Later, we'll be speaking with Fiona Patten, leader of the Australian Sex Party, on the Senate voting reform and the role of minor parties' independence in the Senate. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Now, Rodney Croom is one of the veteran activists for the LGBTI community and continues his work today as a spokesperson for the Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group and as the National Director for the Australian Marriage Equality Organisation. Hi, Rodney. Thanks for joining us and our listeners here on The Informer at Joy.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Before we move on to Australian politics, our community has been left reeling after a man carried out a mass shooting at a gay club, Pulse, in Orlando, Florida, on Sunday morning. Now, this attack was carried out at Latino night, and the shooter was 29-year-old Omar Martin. Now, after the initial comment that downplayed the location of the shooting being a gay bar, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has condemned the attack as a murderous attack on gay people and assault on freedom. Do you think that with this response, he will continue to focus on security as an answer for this problem?
Well, I'm very pleased that he's acknowledged this is a hate crime, and I welcome all of those politicians who do the same. Just this afternoon in Hobart, where I live, the Tasmanian Parliament passed a motion extending its condolences to the victims of the massacre, to the families and loved ones of the victims of the massacre, and acknowledging that it was a hate crime against LGBTI people and sending a clear message to LGBTI people in Tasmania and beyond that discrimination, hatred, prejudice and bigotry should have no place in our society. And that was a motion that was unanimously supported by that parliament, including all the Liberals and Labor and Green members. And those who spoke sent a very strong message of support and reassurance for LGBTI people because... And I think that's important because the sense I get at the moment is that LGBTI people, many of us, are afraid. We watch this on television in America and we know that it's not impossible that it could happen here.
Yeah.
Even though we have obviously far stricter gun laws in Australia and hopefully a little less divided society when it comes to LGBTI human rights than the United States, still we look at that and we know that there is prejudice and hatred in the community, and it's very important that our leaders stand up against that, as they have done with the motion I mentioned, with other state and federal leaders speaking out.
Yeah.
So that's a very positive thing, and I welcome it.
Yeah, it is an amazing thing to see, Rodney. We certainly don't want to see those sorts of hate crimes being committed here in Australia. But, you know, just to see our leaders actually acknowledge it, because that's not really the response that we've seen, certainly in the United States. It's been quite different.
Yes, well, I've seen conservative Republicans in the United States pointedly refuse to acknowledge this as a hate crime against LGBTI people. And like I said, in the United States, the community is clearly much more deeply divided on this than it is in Australia. We can only hope that will change and that ordinary Americans will see the horror of this. They will see that in all its hideousness, the bigotry and hatred behind it, and that they will move them in a direction towards greater acceptance of LGBTI people. That, I hope, would be the silver lining on this terrible event.
It's funny that, because you'd sort of think, what a great example there is here in Australia, because there's an election on, but there's also an election on in the United States, and that's just a different path they've taken.
Trump, they've both made, both Hillary and Donald Trump have made comments. Trump's, of course, was first he wanted people to thank him for warning them of a terrorist attack, and Clinton outlined a 3-point plan on tackling ISIS. Now, given the information that is continuing to come come out that does say that, you know, there is little to no evidence that this man was involved in any kind of a network or cell or organized group that helped in the planning of the attack. Why do you think, even in Australia and with our government, you know, that has come forward and called this a hate crime, why are we still seeing this being used as an issue to bring up border security?
Oh, I think it's almost inevitable that it will be used in order to raise issues of security, particularly in the United States, because it's such a hot issue. It shouldn't be seen as an either-or thing. I mean, it will be seen as an issue of security, and, of course, it'll also be seen in the United States as an issue of gun control,
yeah.
Rightly so. It'll be discussed in those terms, as it's been discussed in those terms in Australia. But it is still, clearly and at its heart, a hate crime.
Yeah.
The motivation was clearly hatred, even if it was a terrorist attack, even if it was organised as a terrorist attack. There's no clear evidence for that yet, but even if it was the case, it was still motivated by hatred.
We need to
acknowledge that. To hide that or to overlook that is to reinforce the very prejudice that's culpable here.
Yeah, I agree completely. Now, what do you we're now hearing more information that Omar himself was actually a regular at Pulse and used gay dating apps. So, do you think this when we do see this kind of self-hatred in the community, what can be done to help that? What can we see change in politics from what it is now to see that kind of an end to that kind of a self-hatred, which does has the potential to really rot within a person?
It's only an implication, of course, that it was self-hatred. We don't know that
for
certain.
No, you're right.
He may have been simply casing his potential victims or the place that he intended to attack. So it may have been self-hatred, it may just have been hatred of others. In either case, the answer is better understanding of the implications of hatred and the damage that prejudice does. I know that sounds... It sounds terribly long-term. It doesn't sound like a solution that we can implement now, but in my experience, it's the only solution. The only solution is to reach out to people and let them know what this means, let them know the damage that prejudice causes, not only by taking lives in Orlando, but in the lives of tens of millions of LGBTI people across the world on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do that to the best of our abilities, in the LGBTI community, and I congratulate everyone who does that, who works to educate others about the damage that prejudice causes in the law or at school or at church or in a sporting club or wherever it might be. But, of course, the positive impact of that kind of education is so much greater if our leaders are echoing it and reflecting it.
And I'm
one who always tries to encourage our leaders to do that, no matter which party they're in, no matter which level of government they're at. We should always be trying to encourage our leaders to do that. And I'm glad that we have leaders in Australia who have begun to do that. And I mentioned before the Tasmanian motion, and I think that's an element of that, seeing all the parties standing together against hatred and for inclusion was a good thing for Tasmania. And in other states, we're seeing that too. It's a good thing across the country.
And also, you know, from our federal leaders as well. And we're in the middle of a federal election campaign, as I mentioned before.
The longest ever.
Well, it is the longest, but you know what? That's okay as well. So, look, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, what would be the best outcome for the upcoming federal election? What do you think?
The best outcome, from my point of view, would be if we had a government that... was willing to allow marriage equality and the other really important LGBTI reforms that we need at the federal level to pass through Parliament with majority support. I don't support the idea of a plebiscite on marriage equality. I think that's unnecessary. And I'd hope that we can move forward without that. And I'd hope that the Senate, whatever form it takes after the election, would support legislation going through. Now, I say that in a way that doesn't point the finger at any political party. Now, obviously, the Liberals and the Nationals support a plebiscite at the moment, and Labor doesn't. But I think that it's possible that after the election, we can persuade Parliament to not go down that course, regardless of the party that is elected.
Depending on the outcome in the Senate.
Well, we're...
Depending on the outcome in the Senate and depending on the makeup of those particular parties. Now, in terms of the people who are elected in them. Australian marriage equality over the last few weeks has been working hard in individual electorates to encourage Liberals who don't yet support marriage equality to move over towards supporting and to highlighting those candidates who do support marriage equality.
And all that information is on your website, is that correct?
It is, yes, it is. People can go to our website and they can see which candidates support marriage equality and which don't.
Yep.
And I'm hopeful that whichever party is elected after the election, that they will allow a free vote on this for marriage equality to go through.
Well, we're 18 sleeps away, so we'll find out soon, I guess, one way or another.
We will. My point is, I don't think it's impossible for a coalition government, if it is elected, to be persuaded that a plebiscite is a bad idea. I think it really depends on who's in the party at the time, who's in the party room, and the sense they get from the community that the community really wants this to be resolved as quickly as possible. So my best outcome would be, who's ever in government, they go, let's just pass this as soon as possible.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Informer, Rodney, and thank you for your work in making sure this kind of information, so where your ministers stand, is really readily available to the voters of Australia. Again, thank you for joining us on The Informer. Up next, Fiona Patterson from the Australian Sex Party. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9.
There are 56 parties and groups contesting the Senate in the 2016 federal election, plus there are ungrouped candidates, another 16 in Victoria alone. Senate voting will be complex due to the recent changes. Instead of marking just one box above the line, voters will now number at least six boxes, but a vote will still be counted if fewer than six are numbered. I'm confused already. Even with the long lead up to the election, it would be impossible to interview a representative from all of the parties and groups standing for the Senate. But tonight we thought it'd be good to have a look at one of the minor parties, the Australian Sex Party in this case. Established in 2009 as a response to increasingly draconian censorship laws and escalating government encroachment on adult civil liberties, the Australian Sex Party now has hopefully over 6,000 members, and it's played an incredibly vital role in shaping the Australian political and social landscape. Tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Fiona Patton, the leader of the Australian Sex Party and member of the Victorian Legislative Council in Victoria. Welcome, Fiona.
Hello.
A long-winded introduction, but certainly worthwhile. Look, first off, I guess that our listeners are wondering why we're doing an interview with your party in the context of a federal election, but you're a bit of a force in politics, certainly state politics, aren't you?
Well, look, certainly the biggest hurdle and the highest bar for any small party is getting that first member elected, whether it's at a state level or at a federal level. And certainly having reached that step and made that first step, it changes the dynamic for when you're running the next time round. So this time running in the federal election with someone who's already sitting in Parliament, it does change the game somewhat for us and hopefully improves our chances of winning a second seat.
Now, similarly to federal politics, in Victoria, the state Parliament is certainly controlled by the Labor Party in the lower house, but in the upper house, it's actually not controlled by the Labor Party as well. So there's sort of like crossbenches. There's certainly a Greens bloc as well. So do you sort of hold balance of a power in the Victorian State Parliament?
Yes, to a degree we do. It's a great place to be that the government, well, on a very regular basis, needs my vote. So they need a number of the crossbenchers to get any of their legislative agenda through if the Liberals are voting against it. Now, on lots of law and order issues, the Libs and Labor vote together, but on social issues, certainly we need they need a vote like mine to get it through.
Because also I believe that if the Greens in the upper house decide to vote with the Liberal opposition, let's say they've done some sort of bargaining deal, or they may not actually agree with a piece of legislation, it's up to yourself, the DLP, Vote One, and I think there's a couple of Shooters Party members as well. So I suppose you sort of quasi do hold balance of power.
Yeah. Well, that's right, David. So just to give your listeners a bit of an understanding, there's 40 members in the Legislative Council. 14 of them are from the Labor Party. 16 of them are from the Liberal and Nats. 5 are from the Greens. And then there's 5 crossbenchers, which you quite rightly said, a couple of Shooters, the Democratic Labor Party, myself, and Vote One Local Jobs. So if the Greens and the Liberal Party vote together, that's 21 votes. So that knocks out the government's vote. And the Greens have voted with the Liberal Party on on many occasions, and most recently they voted with them to kick out the leader of the government, Gavin Jennings, a pretty progressive politician, to kick him out for 6 months. So... Yes,
that was quite a long suspension. I'm not sure if it was a record breaker, but it was up there.
It was an absolute record breaker. I think the longest has been 3 days. So It was an extraordinary leap, and I don't think it was justified. I don't think it helps us in the democratic process. I think there were better ways to find a solution to this. And, you know, it was over the government not releasing documents. Documents, I might add, that the Liberal Party actually wrote. So, it was all politics and so the Greens and the Liberal parties did band together. So they can do that. But just going back to those numbers, so even with the Greens voting with the government, that's only 19 votes.
Right.
So they still need 2 of the crossbenchers to vote with them to get any legislation through that the Liberal Party doesn't support.
Okay. Just in case you've joined us, we're talking with Fiona Patten from the Australian Sex Party. Your party has Senate candidates in all of the states around Australia. So now I've noticed that some are under the name of the Australian Sex Party and also under the name of the Australian Sex and Marijuana Party. What are their chances of being elected, any senators around Australia in any of their contests?
Look, I think Victoria is our best chance.
Yeah.
Victoria has become the really true home of the Australian Sex Party, mainly because Victorians are probably more progressive than it's a more progressive state than just about any other state in Australia, without doubt.
We like to think so.
I like to think so too, Rudy.
We are different. We are different, definitely.
Yeah, I think we're pretty fabulous, really. Yeah, so I think our best chance is with our candidate, Dr. Meredith Doig, who's not probably what most people would think was your standard Sex Party supporter. I mean, she's on the council of the Federation University. She's been on the board of Ford and, you know, many other big public companies. She's been on government boards. So she's really will be such a wonderful contributor to our parliamentary process if she's successful. But yeah, we seem to we're better known in Victoria than just about than any other state. And I hope that the work that we've been doing at the state parliament will give people rise to consider voting for us to have a seat in the Senate, albeit against, what did you say? Was it 53 other parties?
Yeah,
running?
Something like that. So, look, yeah. Just before we go, and we do have to wind up in a moment. Is it your party that actually pushed the conversation forward about voluntary euthanasia in this state? Is that an issue that you also want to progress nationally?
Yeah, David, absolutely.
I know I've only got a second to talk to you about this, but it is.
We'd love to progress it nationally. It's something that obviously Dr. Meredith Doig, who was the president of Dying with Dignity, is passionate about. But I put a motion up for this debate to happen. The inquiry. The inquiry occurred from my motion. It was an amazing inquiry. It was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my working life. And we've come out with a recommendation to set up a legal framework for physician-assisted dying. It's the first in the parliamentary inquiry like this to make such a recommendation, and it's supported by four political parties.
Look, as this
that's fantastic.
Yeah, as this progresses, we'd love for you to keep in contact with us. So hopefully, we can talk further about that in the future.
That would be great.
Thanks very much, Fiona, for joining us tonight on The Informer. It's been fascinating. One of the reasons we decided to talk with the Mana Party tonight was to show that we can find out what we need to know from a variety of sources, conversations, internet, news reports and the like, to make informed choices when we vote on July the 2nd. Remember that the Senate will be a battleground. Stay with us. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Up next, we have the latest news from the UK and Europe with Will Stroud from Attitude.
To get the latest news on what's happening in the LGBT community over in the UK, we chat to our correspondent, Will Stroud, web editor of Attitude magazine. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, James. Nice to speak to you.
It's been a quite grave 48 hours in the world for the LGBTI community. I understand you've just come from a vigil in Soho.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is obviously the sad news about Sunday's events in Orlando. I've just come from a vigil that's been held in Soho on Old Compton Street. Absolutely hundreds and hundreds of people from London's LGBT community, as well as leading politicians and even stars there, like all just coming together literally in the last hour or so for a moment's silence. As well as, protesting, sort of silent, dignified protesting song as well. It's really sort of somber, emotional kind of scene there, but, just very defiant as well. And just definitely, a lot of emotional scenes there in London tonight.
Who were some of the major people that turned up for the vigil?
Well, like I say, there were leading politicians. We had people like ex-Labour Party leader Ed Miliband, Jeremy Corbyn, sort of leading MPs as well. Even stars, there was Years and Years, Ollie Alexander stood, right next to us, really, as well as Kit Harington from Game of Thrones. Just people from all walks of life just coming together for this, incredibly moving moment. There was a gay men's chorus there singing Bridge Over Troubled Water. The crowds joined in, really emotional as balloons were sort of released to obviously mark the just appalling deaths of those four people in Pulse Club in Orlando.
Mm. How's the media reacting to the situation? I did notice that a presenter or a guest on Sky News walked off horrified at the way that the media has treated the attack is more of a terrorist attack rather than an act of hatred. Can you comment on just how perhaps the mainstream media is responding in the UK?
Well, I must say that, today, 48 hours later, I guess the gravity of the situation in Orlando has kind of, really hit the media. But, there has been some criticism. Celebrations over the weekend for the Queen's 90th birthday as this tragedy was unfolding, whether news outlets weren't reporting on it as quickly as perhaps they would have in other circumstances. And as well as, like you say, Owen Jones, who's a leading political commentator and author, openly gay, was appearing on Sky News and, eventually ended up walking out because of what he was what was widely seen as the host and other panelists' attempt to reduce the LGBT angle of the atrocity and play down the fact that this was a hate crime, targeted at an LGBT venue and against gay people in particular.
Okay, and finally, before you leave, Will, you had a story that went up just about how the father has come out and spoken for the first time publicly. The father of the gunman,
absolutely. This is the gunman's father, who's actually from Afghanistan, who's released a statement onto Facebook, a video earlier this morning, is, apologising for his son's actions. He describes himself as grief-stricken and obviously, you know, sort of shocked. Said he had no idea that his son had this hatred in his heart, but also said in comments that have obviously ignited a lot of sort of ferocious comments, certainly among our readership, saying that it's not for humans to punish homosexuality because God will do that, which obviously, in light of the circumstances, you know, has obviously upset a lot of people afresh, I guess, sort of, you know, implying that there sort of should be any punishment at all, given the, you know, awful tragedy that occurred on Sunday.
Absolutely. Will Stroud, web editor of Attitude Magazine, thank you so much for joining us again.
My pleasure.
And thank you. That was Will Stroud from Attitude. Now, during that, we actually received a few texts. So thank you so much for getting back to us here on air. We do love to hear from you, listeners. The texts are looking forward to voting for the sex party and go Fiona Patton for Progressive Voices. So I hope you listen to that, Fiona. That's always a bit of good news to receive. Now, thank you for today's guests, Rodney Crome, Krum and Fiona Patton. Today's show was produced by Ruby Susan, myself and David Gale. For a podcast of tonight's program and other stories, head to joy.org.au/informer. We'll be back tomorrow night at 6:30. Coming up next is World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.